This tape was made on February the 6th, 1992, at the home of Pee Wee King on Country Lane in Louisville, Kentucky. It's the first tape in a series that we hope will become the basis for a book on Pee Wee's life and his career as a Western and country musician. I'll just put this right here. It should pick up without any trouble at all. That's okay. What I want to do is to try to stay with your early years in Wisconsin, with some family history, and all of your as many of your memories as you can tell me about growing up in Wisconsin and about your family life and so on. And we'll see how far we get. And then what we'll do next time is pick up there and go on more or less chronologically. So I've kind of outlined some things that I want to ask you. And then we won't have to stick to the outline, but at least it'll give us something to go by, you know. So let's begin, Pee Wee, with your birth, which is a good beginning. Where and when were you born?
February 18th, 1914.
Where?
On the south side of Milwaukee.
In a hospital?
I don't remember. I don't know.
You don't know whether your mother was in a hospital or whether
I
you were born?
I doubt much she was in a hospital.
You think you were born at home?
Born at home, yeah.
But you think there was a doctor there, or was it a midwife or a nurse or?
It probably was a doctor.
Yeah. A doctor? Okay. Where did you come in the family?
I was first.
You were the first? You're
I'm
the oldest. You're the oldest.
Yeah.
How long did you live in Milwaukee after you were born?
Early years, school age. I finished grade school in Milwaukee, and then we moved to the farm, and raised on a farm, but at the same time, I had thoughts of going to high school.
Mm-hmm.
So I lived with one of my aunts for a while I went to high school, Bayview High School, and then came back to the farm.
Mm-hmm. But
my mother and dad passed away at the farm.
Uh-huh. But now, you were born in 1914 in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
When did your family move to Abrams?
Abrams, I would say, in 1931.
They moved, you mean you really grew up in Milwaukee then?
Yeah. My grade school days. I didn't go to, there was no schools on the farm up there.
Well, if they moved there in 1931, let's see, you would have been, about 17 when they moved. They must have moved before then, don't you think?
No. Yeah, because I went to high school when I was 50. Maybe why.
And they had already moved then?
And they were up there, yeah.
They had already moved to the farm.
And in 15, 16. No, they were in Milwaukee because Dad got my sister accordion and I took the lessons instead of her.
And that would have been when?
When I was in 1914 plus 30.
About 1930. So you think they moved to the farm around
30.
Around 1930.
Yeah.
Okay. But you don't know, is there any way you could check that?
No, the only way I could do it, I'm looking through the scrapbook with pictures.
Okay, well we could check that and see. What about your early days in Milwaukee? You were the oldest. When was your next
My sister, 2 years later.
2 years later?
Yeah. And then a brother, Irvin Max, they called him. Now, he's also in the Constantino Hall of Fame.
Uh-huh.
And he was born 4 years after my sister, so that makes him 6 years older than I am.
Uh-huh.
I mean, younger than I am. And then Gene over here with me at the record shop.
How do you spell Gene's name?
G-E-N-E.
Okay.
The first was my sister.
What was her name?
I was older. What? And then my sister, Irene.
Irene.
She's the second.
Okay.
Born 2 years later.
All right.
And then Irvin is his right name.
I-R-V-I-N-G?
E-R.
E-R-V-I-N. E-R-V-I-N.
Yeah, but then it put, you know, Max, because that's been his nickname all ever since he first started playing music.
Irvin Max. Okay. And Max in quotation marks, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And he's 6 years younger than I am.
Mm-hmm.
So that'd make him born in 1920.
Mm-hmm.
And then my brother Gene, he's 8 years.
Uh-huh. So younger. Okay. Irene, Irvin Max, and Gene. Any others?
No, that's all.
You had. Well, that was a small family, wasn't it?
It was. My mother lost twins. And when I was 21 years old, I found out about it, and I gave her hell for not telling me.
Well, now,
they kept it a secret.
You mean, and this was after you were born?
After, yeah. Between Irene and Max, it was 4 years that elapsed there, she lost a set of twins.
And you had no knowledge.
Nobody talked about it.
Yeah. Because you were too young to know those things, to know what was going on, to know where babies came from, I guess, even, in those days.
Yeah, I didn't believe in the stork, I know that.
Yeah. What's your earliest memory, as a boy? Do you remember anybody?
One incident I remember very well. My Uncle Kelly, he was married to my mother's sister.
Mm-hmm.
And she just passed away this week. But anyhow, he was in the service during World War I, 1914 or 17 or whatever it was. And he came back from the service, and we were living above a tavern.
Mm-hmm.
My dad would work in a factory in the daytime and then 10 bar at night. And we lived upstairs. And my mother, for my birthday, which if he came back in 1917, that had made me 3 years old. And that's the picture I'm looking for. My mother taking me down the sidewalk and teaching me how to ride the tricycle.
Because mm-hmm.
that's the first bike I had.
Mm-hmm.
And I parked it under the door, under the steps. There was a little cubby hole there that put shovels and the rakes over there. And I parked that tricycle under there. And I must have trusted everybody in the neighborhood. And for a couple of days, it was fine. But then one day I went down there, checked the bike, and it was gone. That's the first memory I have of my childhood in Milwaukee.
Losing your tricycle?
Yeah.
Did you ever find it?
Nobody never found it.
No.
We searched the neighborhood and watched for it in the neighborhood. And my mother and dad my dad being a bartender, he told a lot of the guys, you know, watch for a little red bicycle going down the street with some kid on it.
And you never found it?
No.
Did you get another one?
No, not until I got a two-wheeler.
Mm-hmm. So you were really...
I was a Western Union boy.
Yeah. Now you were really upset though over that bicycle, tricycle.
I was crushed. Because to think my mom and dad make such little money and go out and buy a bicycle for me, it really hurt me.
Yeah. And then they have somebody steal it.
And it was under the steps, it was open.
Mm-hmm.
But they wouldn't bother the tools under there, the rake and the rest with you. Mm-hmm.
What kind of house did you live in when you were a boy?
Well, then from there, we moved to Windick Avenue.
What was the house you were born in? Did you remember that at all?
No.
You just remember that you had a place you could put the tricycle under.
And then we moved to Windick Avenue.
What was the name of the street that you were born on?
South 6th Avenue. Let's see, it was... trying to remember... Did we go north and south and east and west? South 5th Street.
South 5th Street.
Yeah.
Do you remember the number?
No.
Is the house still standing, do you think?
That whole area later on became commercial.
So all the houses were raised?
Houses were raised, yeah. I vaguely, maybe I'll find it when looking for a picture, but I remember one of my mother's sisters got married and they lived in a house just about a block away. And that would probably bring back memories. Mm-hmm. They usually used to write on the back of the picture where it was.
So about how old were you when you moved from that house to the next house?
About 8 years old.
So you'd already started your school by then?
Yeah, I was in school. I went to the Catholic school, then I went to the public school.
Let's go back to the second house that you moved to. Where was that? What street?
Windlake Avenue.
How do you spell that?
W-I-N-D-L-A-K-E.
Windlake.
Named after a lake that was on the south side of Milwaukee for a while, but the lake disappeared. They filled it up, and the address was 901 West Windlake.
901 West Windlake,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And what kind of house was that?
It was just ordinary, nothing like this, like you see out in the West End.
Shotgun house, maybe?
Yeah, shotgun. You know, where one family home.
Yeah. How many rooms?
Well, we had one bedroom downstairs, and upstairs we had room for two bedrooms later on. Pa did, and then he added another bedroom onto the house, and my mother's sister lived with us.
Who was she? What was her name?
Anna. Auntie Anna. She just died. Auntie Anna. Aunt Anna. Her name was...
A-N-N-A, Anna.
Yeah, Nazarek.
How do you spell that?
M-I-E-L-C-A-R-E-K. That's the one that married Uncle Kelly. Uh-huh. Marie. Aunt Marie. My mother was the oldest. Then Aunt Anna, then Marie. And then Stella, and then Lottie, then Stella. And the two brothers of hers were Tony and Vic, in that order. So the Mozart family is wiped out now. They are no more.
That was your mother's family. That was her maiden name.
Yeah.
And spell that again for me.
M-I-E-L-C-A-R-E-K.
M-I-E-L-C?
M-I-E-L. C-A-R-E-K.
C-A-R-E-K.
Yeah.
Okay. What did you call your mother?
I always called my mom.
Mom?
Yeah, mom.
And you called your father?
Pa.
P-A. Pa.
Yes.
Okay. okay, the house had two bedrooms upstairs, and then you built on a room for your aunt,
to live with us.
Anna. And one bedroom downstairs. What other rooms did you have downstairs?
Well, the dining room.
Dining room.
And it wasn't a recreation room, but it was something that Pa used to play his concertina all the time. He'd take the instruments, so we call that the music room.
Uh-huh. Was there anything else in the room?
all this furniture.
It wasn't a bedroom, though?
No.
It's kind of like a den, or?
Den, yeah. Today they call it
a den.
But we'd always have parties downstairs because we had a big basement.
So you had a basement that you could use for?
For parties.
Parties.
Yeah.
What kind of parties would you have?
Oh, just get-togethers with my mother's people and my dad's people. They'd come over and visit and stay for Sunday dinner, and Pop bring the concertina out and play. And first thing I knew, they were dancing and everything. And that always intrigued me.
Yeah. Now, your family was Polish on both sides, right? Your mother and your father's side.
My mother's and my father's people all came from Poland. Well, my father's grandfather was originally from Austria, but then he moved to America and they met my grandmother, and she was Polish. They were homesteaders.
Oh, they were?
Yeah, from Wisconsin.
I'll get to that in a little bit more detail a little bit later, but what about your father's brothers and sisters? How many did he have?
Now, let's see. Dad, one, oldest.
Your father was the oldest.
And then Walter. And then there was a girl died, Helen, by the name. She was named Helen, just like my mother. And I was shocked when I went to the graveyard one time later on in life. And I says, my mother's still living. You got her name on a tombstone. They corrected it. And of course, I found out it was one of my dad's sisters. Then came Aunt Pearl. Uncle Tony come after me, when Helen died.
Uncle Tony.
And then Pearl, Aunt Pearl came along. And then Aunt Anna on my father's side.
Yeah, you had an Anna on both sides.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then Carrie is what they call her. And that was it. Carrie was the baby.
So how many?
I always say there was about eight.
Eight.
Let's see. Pa, Walter, Helen, Tony, Anna, Pearl, and Carrie.
Seven. Well, that was about the
for a farm family.
But were they a farm family?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Grandpa and Grandma lived nowhere but on a farm. They homesteaded is what the farm stayed there.
Now, both of your parents,
people,
were from the farm.
From the farm.
From around Abrams?
No, one was in Sabisky, and the other one in Swamico. And my mother's people lived in Sabisky.
Sabisky?
Yeah, Sobieski, like Pulaski.
Okay, uh-huh. Where was that?
That's up in northern Biscobar, above Green Bay. Mm-hmm. And my dad's people lived in Little Swamico.
Swamico?
S-U-M-A-M-C-I-O. Okay. And that was named after the little river that runs down there. There's a big Swamico at the end of the river because that's where the river ran into a big lake, or a bay, I should say, Green Bay. That was big Swamico. And then about 6 miles up the road was a little town, cheese factory, two taverns, a grocery store, and that was Little Swamico, the post office.
So when your parents moved back to the farm, they did not move back to the same communities where they grew up, did they?
No.
Because Abrams was not where they grew up.
No, Abrams is, they bought a farm from a friend of theirs who was going to the city, and he wanted to sell the farm, and my dad bought it.
Do you know why your parents moved to Milwaukee?
Yes, my mother was working in Chicago at the time, and my dad was in Reading, Pennsylvania. That's where he was born. Mm-hmm. And my mom was born in Chicago. So when they the old Usador for homesteaders and everything else. Dad came to Milwaukee to work, and then he used to visit at the farm every chance he got. And Mom worked in Chicago as a seamstress at one of the dressmaking companies. And then she'd visit Sabisky all the time, and the church was in Sabisky.
Oh.
So Mom and Dad met at the church.
Oh, yeah, what church was that?
St. John's Catholic Church.
St. John's Catholic Church. Was it a social, or was it a...
I don't know, they just, Mom just hit it off right away. Yeah. My dad was working then in the meantime up there when he lived. He also, in wintertime, when the train would come in, he used to have a horse and buggy, but in the wintertime he had a sled. Mm-hmm. So he'd take those people home wherever they lived. Well, they came by train, and they'd be about 2-3 miles there. Very few cars in those days. And he'd drive the horse and a sled or a horse and a buggy.
From the depot?
From the depot.
Uh-huh.
And my mother worked at the like a restaurant and a two-story hotel. And the people, if they came in on the train late at night, they would check and stay at the hotel. Mm-hmm. And my mother worked at a hotel, and she did the maid service.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So...
Now that was after they moved back to the farm, is that right?
No, this was before. Before they moved.
Well, was this before she was a seamstress in Chicago?
Yeah.
It was before she was a seamstress?
No, she was a seamstress in Chicago.
Uh-huh. And then she moved back home?
Back home.
Uh-huh.
She was the oldest, and then these girls come along, and Grandpa and Grandma. My grandfather was a board of directors or something like that. He had a title at the Sabisky Public School on the school board.
Mm-hmm.
And one time he and my grandma had a big argument, and he left and went to New York State and bought a bean farm up there.
A bean farm?
Yeah.
What kind of beans?
Well, you know,
green beans.
Yeah. And he lived there himself all those years. They never went back together.
They didn't?
No.
Now that was unusual for that day, wasn't it?
But they're buried next to each other.
Are they? Well, now how did your grandmother support herself?
Well, the kids all worked, see.
Oh, they were already grown?
Yeah, the girls were grown. They were moving into the city one at a time.
Yeah.
And then when they came to the city, they lived with my mother and dad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for a while we had Anna, and we had my dad's sister Pearl, and my dad's sister Anna, and then Carrie, and then one of their cousins, Adam Drobeck, he lived with us a while.
Adam
Drobeck, D-R-O-B-E-C-K. And they had the farm next to my grandfather's farm.
It was a crowded house, wasn't it, when all those kin people...
Well, that's what the two bedrooms did upstairs, mm-hmm. See. And then now we had, this was before Irvin was born, I was sleeping on one of the, like a homemade couch, or what you call, today we call what?
A cot, maybe?
Cot. Like army cot.
Mm-hmm.
See.
Okay, so we're still in Milwaukee,
and you're
in school. What was the first school you went to?
The first school was the St. Cyril School.
St.
Cyril,
C-Y-R-I-L, St. Cyril School. Was that the parish school?
Parish school.
Okay, how long did you go there?
Well, from about kindergarten to about the fourth or fifth grade.
You went to kindergarten then? Before the first grade?
Oh, yeah.
When did you learn to read and write?
I don't know. I just
Would that have been, well, maybe in kindergarten, possibly. Do you remember any of your early teachers?
No, I remember, the one thing I remember is this one sister. During recess, the windows were about a foot or 2 feet higher than the sidewalk of the playground.
Mm-hmm.
And the boys would sneak out and play on the yard. Instead of taking recess, we'd all go maybe down at the corner store and buy remember them licorice sticks, mm-hmm. the licorice whips?
Mm-hmm.
They had two kinds, the black ones and the red one. The red ones to give you the one flavor and the black ones is mm-hmm. And we'd sneak out there and for a penny or 2 pennies, we'd go down and get some whips for ourselves. And I happened to be the last one that crossed over the wind and go down there. So she stuck her head out and she says, Frankie, come here. So I went in there. And in those days, they didn't slap your hand. They used that little whip, just a short whip. And she'd hit
a whip?
Not a whip, a leather strap.
A leather strap.
Yeah. She says, hold out your hand. Uh-oh, here it comes. I said, oh, and she put her hand over here and she was holding my hand and she hit me. And she says, that wasn't good enough. Now here, and I pulled it out and she hit herself. And I was got a note to take home to my mother. And I was
what was that? What was that sister's name? Do you remember
that? I don't remember.
Most people remember their first grade teachers. You don't remember?
Oh, I remember. Now, I went to Cabot School. I moved to a public school. Right after that incident, my mother took me out of the school.
Why? Why?
Well, because she didn't want her son, her sister, punishing her son.
Oh, really?
So I was put in public school. And the first teacher I had was Mrs. Schott.
Mrs.?
S-C-H-O-T-T.
Mrs. Schott.
Yeah.
She must have been German.
Oh, yeah. That was living in a German neighborhood, uh-huh. German and Polish.
German and Polish neighborhood.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
She was very attractive, and I was about 6 years old, 5 years old.
Miss, was it a Miss Shop?
Miss Shop.
Miss. What, you don't remember what her first name was?
No.
You didn't know your teacher's first name, did you?
I had to call her Miss Shop.
Not all the time. So you were moved from the parochial school to the public school in the first grade?
Right? No, about the third or fourth.
For third or fourth grade?
Yeah.
But now you don't remember your first grade teacher then?
No.
Because she would have been in the parochial school.
She was the sister.
Sister. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You don't remember any of the sisters that taught you except the one that so how old were you when the teacher paddled your hand?
I would say
at the fourth grade, maybe?
About 7 or 8.
8, maybe. Because if your mother moved you, what, at the end of that year or with immediately? Did she transfer you to the public school immediately?
No. They left from Winlick Avenue and moved on a farm. And we were living on the farm in Winlick Avenue when that happened.
They had already moved to Abrams, right? No?
No, they're not.
They were still in the Milwaukee area?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so you started to the public school in the fourth grade.
Yeah.
You started out in the fourth grade.
Yeah.
There.
Summer fourth or fifth.
Fourth or fifth.
Yeah.
And your teacher was
Miss Shaw.
Miss Shaw. And why did you like her?
I don't know. She just was an attractive woman, and she was very very nice. She taught all of her kids the same manners. Everybody was the same to her. Boy or a girl, if they were mean. And we had a couple Mexican boys. We had a girl in school that I liked very much, and that was, I didn't think I'd ever forget it. Yeah, I used to help her with the books a lot of times, carry books now.
Was it your first girlfriend?
I would say so, yeah. Well, school children.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you liked her.
Well, she had a Mexican name, too.
forgotten your
it'll
first?
It'll come to me. This will go on.
Okay. Do you remember any other classmates that you had in the early grades?
Yeah, my Uncle Kelly's brother. And his name was Alfred Kellis, K-A-L-L-E-S. He was married to Auntie Anna.
Uh-huh. And he was a classmate?
He was in the public school. In the Kelly school. But he's passed away.
Did you all chum around together?
Yep, we were inseparable.
Uh-huh. What did you do together?
We'd ice skate in the park together. We'd play baseball together. Just during lunch hour, usually we had a short two-inning game or something like that. Basketball especially, we played a lot of basketball.
Well, now, where would you play? Were there public playgrounds? Or?
Playgrounds, yeah.
What was
and
the...
he went to Catholic school where my Auntie Anna was buried from yesterday. His people put him in a Catholic school so he can receive communion and confirmation.
But this was after he'd been in the public school or
after?
Afterwards. So there was shifting back and forth
back
between
and
the
forth.
Public and the
Catholic. In high school, one of my best friends was stayed with me. He was with the band, Ted Fabian. P-Y-Z-Y-K, Ted Pizek is his right name, but Ted Fabian was we used to call him.
Fabian?
Yeah, like the singer.
Mm-hmm.
And he played saxophone and clarinet. And he and I became friends when I put the band together. He was a halfway comedian. He was going to be a fall guy all the time. Mm-hmm. So it made me look good because the jokes were always great on him.
Right.
And we made up songs. We used to make up. We played the monkey. He got drunk as an old garner skunk. What the heck? We'd make up little lyrics to some kids' songs.
That's when you were how old, maybe?
Well. This is when I went to high school. I was about 15.
15. You make up songs with your with your cousin? What cousin?
No, just a friend of mine.
A friend.
Yeah.
Now, who was the friend?
Ted Pizek.
Now spell that again.
Ted Fabian.
Okay. Yeah. Now he was not your relative.
We stayed friends. He came down to Louisville with me. Mm-hmm. When we came down, he was one of the boys that wanted to stay down here, but he went back home. And then he went to. He went to college in Bismarck.
North Dakota?
Yeah.
Did you all ever make up any songs later on?
No, just while, when something came to him, on a spur of the moment, we'd sit down and novelty band.
Mm-hmm.
We were all, let's see, there was six of us, an Italian, a Russian, Polish, Irish, Lenny Shaw was Irish, and then Fat Mike, he was German. So, the drummer.
That was your dance band in high school?
No, that was my band.
It was your band? Was it in high school?
Yeah, the King's Jesters.
King's Jesters. Oh, well that's, okay. But did you have a band before the King's Jesters?
No, my dad had the band.
Oh. But I thought there was a band before the King's Jesters.
No, Midnight Four. No, he had the band. Midnight Four plus One.
Oh yeah, I knew that. Uh-huh. Yeah. Let's stay as much as we can in your very earliest years. When you were living in Milwaukee, did you sometimes visit your grandparents out on the farms?
Every summer that I could get away and spend the entire summer with either one or the other. Or maybe I'd alternate 2 weeks with this one, 2 weeks with my grandmother, because she was by herself with the two boys, Tony and Vic, mm-hmm. the youngest brothers of my mother, and I'd help them all the time. Mm-hmm. And when I went to my grandfather and my grandmother and my dad's people, mm-hmm. See, Uncle Tony was my, I idolized Uncle Tony. He was my hero when I was a kid. And he'd take me every morning when we get through milking, he'd take the milk to the cream factory and he'd stop at the grocery store and he'd buy a nickel's worth of candy or something. And we used a horse and buggy too. I remember that. There was an old stone, there was a farm right on the corner before you turned into town. And the Wedgwood was there, and I never realized that later on in life he was would become one of my best friends and best customers when I got, even when I was on the Grand Ole Opry, he would always round up with quite a few people to come out and see us.
What was his name?
Wedgwood.
Wedgwood?
Yeah, it was a German.
Right.
And there was a great big rock, and that rock was a marking place. And we used to watch it just wither away year after year after year, and it's still there.
Still remains of it.
And that's every, I marvel at that.
What did you do on the farm in the summer? What kinds of
to
work?
Help them.
What'd you do?
Make hay or bring in corn or shuck corn or work on. I remember I got $1 a day for being the blower boy on a threshing machine.
The boiler boy?
Blower boy. That's
a blower.
The great big pipe that sticks out of a thresh machine.
Uh-huh.
And you got to guide it and make the straw separate in different places so it won't pile up in one big pile.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I did. And the guys who worked in the field, and they'd come in and they'd go around and spread the straw at lunchtime. And everywhere we threshed, Mr. Peters owned the thresh machine. It was a co-op deal, but he was the head honcho. And I got $1 a day for him. And later on, he made me take the concertina and play with the old men at night. We'd sit around and think of songs to do and play the concertina.
But now, you stayed with your grandparents, though,
yeah,
at night. Yeah. I mean, you sleep.
No, at night we slept. If we were in a big farm threshing, we'd sleep in the barn right there.
In the barn?
Yeah.
So this was a threshing crew that would move through from one farm to another.
Yeah, about 2 years, it lasted about 2 years that I worked with Mr. Peters. But that one summer, I enjoyed the tour very much to see how, we marveled at how much the difference was with the farmers cooking. You go to different farmers, different nationalities,
mm-hmm.
you eat different food.
Mm-hmm.
German, Swedes, Polish, you know.
Who's your favorite?
Well, Polish,
naturally. like what kinds of food would you be served?
Well, you get Polish sausage for one thing.
Yeah. What is Polish sausage? What is it?
Polish sausage is made up of ground beef and pork and garlic.
And garlic.
Yeah. A lot of garlic.
And garlic.
And Germans, they had liver sausage, loose liver, and rye bread, a lot of rye bread.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them, women, make cakes and pies for it, because that in summertime you got all the fruit, you know, the apple pies and the cherry pies and that. But I remember that first one. That was all such a something new to me.
Yeah. So how old you been then? About
14, 15.
It's before you had a band, before you were playing.
Yeah.
To entertain. So really, this was your first audience then, wasn't it? The threshing crew?
Yeah, we used to have a lot of fun.
Would the host families sometimes join you in the barn?
Well, they'd come in, a lot of, when they have the thresh floor in the summertime, they have to clean it and sweep it out, and the thresh floor was the ground, you know, like clay or something like that, and they used to even have dances there.
In the barn?
In the barn.
Uh-huh.
And
you would sometimes play the concertina?
Yeah, I'd play the concertina, and then some guy would make believe he had a drum and beat on a block of wood or something.
But what other instruments would there have been that the men had there that they could play?
They didn't have any.
Didn't have any, well, you were the only
unless,
one that
had... Unless one of the guys played a violin or something like that. But it's very seldom you find a musician in these farmhouses. They all had pianos. Everybody had practically a piano. Those days, the piano was the instrument.
But that would have been in the parlor, not in the barn.
Yeah, that's right.
You didn't. Where would you all eat? Would you eat in the farmhouse?
The kitchen, in the farmhouse.
In the farmhouse.
Or else they would have big tables outdoors, and you'd have they'd spread them out there.
At noontime, I guess you would.
Off at noon and come back and thresh. And if we didn't finish it, then we'd have to come back. We'd spend the night there and come back and start there. We'd have breakfast there too.
Mm-hmm. So the host family would feed you the three meals or whatever meals you
whatever
were there
needed,
for.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You were well fed, I guess, weren't you?
Oh, everyone, I tell you, we didn't have a bad meal anywhere that I can remember.
Yeah. Because when you're
you got all the fresh milk you want, and coffee,
and cheese.
Cheese, well, a lot of cheese. Yeah, Wisconsin.
Yeah. Now this would have been around the Green Bay area.
Around between Suamico and Sabisky.
Okay, that's where your grandparents were from.
Three little towns there. You had Big Suamico, Little Suamico, and Sabisky. Corners and Sabisky.
Now, how far are they from Green Bay, approximately?
About 25 miles.
So that's close to
yeah.
It got cold up there, didn't it?
Yes, it did, in wintertime. Yeah. But I very seldom would, be up there in wintertime, at that period of time. And I remember running away from home, too.
What was that?
Well, I was milking 16 cows in the morning, 16 at night. And play music whenever I had a chance.
Now, when you were living in Milwaukee?
No, on a farm.
Oh, up there in the summertime?
Yeah.
Okay.
In the evenings. And I just packed up and I went to live with my aunt for a while, about 2 months. And Uncle Walter came and said, "Do you know your mother's sick in the bed?" I said, "No." He says, "You better go up and see her." So. Another guy we called Uncle Stanley was no relative of ours, but we called him Uncle Stanley. He had a motorcycle with a sidecar on it. So he says, "Frankie, you want to go see your mother?" And I said, "Yeah, I'll go." He says, "When are you coming back?" He said, "Well, maybe a day or two." So we ran up. There was my mother, sure enough, in bed. She says, "Well, what are you doing home?" I said, "I come to see how sick you were." She started crying, I started crying, and that was it.
All right, you were about how old then when you ran away from home?
I was about 15, 16, somewhere in there.
Now, your parents were living where then?
In Abrams.
In Abrams, because they had already moved back. And you were staying there with them, you were living with them there?
In Milwaukee. No, they were living on a farm then.
In where? In Abrams?
Abrams.
But you were living where?
I was living there. No, really. When that happened, I was... Yeah, I was staying with my Aunt Marie.
In Milwaukee?
In Milwaukee.
Okay.
That's why I went back to Abrams.
And, you were staying with your Aunt Marie because you had run away from home?
No, because I wanted to go to high school.
Oh, that's right, okay. But you were living with your parents when you ran away?
Yeah.
And you ran away to live with whom?
With Marie. Yeah.
Okay. So you had moved with your parents to Abrams. And then you didn't like it. You were milking too many cows?
Yeah. Oh, man.
And so what'd you do with all that milk?
We shipped it. Take it to the creamery.
Oh.
Over in those big cans, milk mm-hmm. cans, and take it to the creamery. Five or six cans.
So, you had brothers and sisters who were getting old enough to help somewhere in the house, didn't you, by then?
My sister got married when she was 16.
Uh-huh.
So she was in Milwaukee living with my Aunt Lottie
uh-huh.
and Eddie. And she was working in the tavern and the restaurant making sandwiches.
That was Irene. She married at 16, yeah, and already left home. Yeah. So you were one of the main hands. You were the main hands to help around the farm, that's then, right, weren't you? And how many cows were you milking?
16.
16 in the morning and at night.
Yeah.
Well, what did you, did your father help, or did you do it all?
Each one of us did. My mom used to come in and milk sometimes.
But you didn't milk all 16?
Not all at once, no.
But you had help for that.
Well, in college.
Yeah. So, well, after you went to see your mother, after she was sick, did you go back to live with your...
No, I went back then to go to school.
Oh, so back to Milwaukee.
Milwaukee.
Uh-huh. Did you like living with your Aunt Marie? Did you enjoy it?
Oh, yeah. I loved it. And at the same time, Uncle Tony and Vic were deciding they were going to come to live in Milwaukee too, so that made three of us leaving the farms and going to stay with them.
Mm-hmm. What did your parents do when they didn't have any help with it? When the children all left home, did they stop farming?
Irvin came along, but still the work depended on Pa. He was the only one.
Which one?
Irvin. Yeah.
Was the one who
he stayed on the farm.
Did all of your brothers and sisters marry?
Are they married now?
No, I said, did they marry? Did they all have families?
Oh, yeah.
Every one of them. How many of them survive now, brothers and sisters?
But my brothers and sisters are sisters still living.
All of them are?
But my sister that got married, her husband passed away.
Oh, I see. But all the others, and they have children too. They have their own families.
Oh my gosh!
Where do they live? Mostly
in Milwaukee.
Mostly in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
All of them?
Well, the kids drifted away and would go to little towns or get work at the Wisconsin Rapids or Kenosha or places like that.
Any of them in music?
Yeah. One of them tried it. My sister's youngest boy, Dennis. And he was a good-looking boy, and he hadn't had a job yet. And he came right out of high school and came and stayed with us a few weeks, and he wanted to get to music as quick as he could. And I took him down to Nashville. And then he met one of the guys from Memphis that was very nice to him, and then the next trip he come down here, he went over to Memphis. He was about 20 or 21 at that time, and he tried to get on records, and nobody would listen to him.
He would
try to dampen his spirit. First of all,
so he's the only relative of yours that ever tried professional music business.
Then my brother come along later years, Irvin. My dad bought him a concertina and he became very, very good at it. And of course that's in that other write-up of the book, Wisconsin Book, they'll tell that, you can read that too. But in fact, the top concertina player, I can't remember, he's a Frenchman. He played Milwaukee and my brother went backstage to meet him and introduce himself. He says, by gosh, he said, you must be pretty good. And he said, in a shy way, you know, he said, he's one of those all shucks boys. And he says, well, he said, I do the best I can with what I got. And he says, how'd you like to try to play my concertina? He said, I don't know. So he got there and started hitting licks on there. He said, you're not a Polish boy. He said, by God, he said, you're playing jazz music there, man. He said, you gotta watch that. And about 2 years later, he was voted into the Hall of Fame.
Your father, what did he do for a living when you were a boy?
He worked in a leather factory.
A leather factory?
Yeah. They made leather, tanned leather, a tanning factory, leather tanning factory. And he became a supervisor, and he used to pick up, I'll never forget that old Chrysler he had. He used to pick up two or three guys to go to work with him. They had a pool in those days and didn't even realize what they were starting. They were these Mexicans that worked there, and Polish guys that worked in this leather tanning factory. Couldn't afford cars, and Paul was just fortunate enough to have a car. And so he'd pick them up and take them to work. I always remember that. And I remember when that Chrysler would get washed and polished and everything else, he'd park in front of the street on Willick Avenue, and we'd have to sit on a porch and watch it. So nobody would scratch it or hit it, yeah.
Really? You didn't have a garage in your house?
Oh yeah, we had a big garage in the back. We had two cars in there because Uncle Barney and had his car, and then Uncle Stanley had his motorcycle, and then Pa had the Chrysler in there.
But what kind of car do you drive now?
Chrysler.
I thought I saw one parked.
That's
there.
Her car.
Oh.
Yeah, I bought that for her.
But you do like Chrysler.
Oh yeah. Well, she's everywhere I go, she drives. You know, because when we go on our trips now, she does most of the driving.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So your father worked in a leather factory.
Leather tanning factory.
They tanned the leather, but they didn't make anything with the leather.
The leather was sent out to the buyers who what they needed, or shoes, or jackets, or gloves. Now there was a glove factory right there too, within a block of it. So that's where they take a lot of that leather for the gloves. And Aunt Marie and Aunt Anna worked in the glove factory.
They made gloves out of the big pieces of leather. So they would take the raw, the hides, and process it.
Process them, make them, and tan. That was what my dad did for a long time.
What other jobs did he have?
That was the only one he had.
I thought you said he was a bartender one time.
Oh, bartender was because he lived there. See, that's where he lived. He was a bartender during the time we lived on Fifth Avenue, or Fifth Avenue.
Oh, you lived at the bar?
No, up above.
Above the bar?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. So that's where you were born. I mean, that's when your mother was living there when you were born, right?
That's right.
Uh-huh, above the bar. And he was not working in the tanning factory then?
No.
He was working at the bar down below?
No, he was working at the leather tanning factory then too. He tanned bar at night.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So, did he own the bar, or he was renting?
No, he was working for the man.
And he was renting the apartment upstairs?
I guess it was a swap-out deal, as far as I can remember.
You don't remember the bar, do you? You don't remember the bar?
I can picture in my mind what it looks like now, because later on we used to go visit my relatives, and we go by the barn and bar and all that, and I said, this is where I used to live.
Yeah. What was the name of the bar, do you know?
Oh, no, I don't remember.
And that's the one that's long gone, and the house has been torn down.
The house is put away.
And there's no plaque there saying Pee Wee King was born here?
No, Abrams. They said, they know I wasn't born in Abrams, but when it says, welcome home, Pee Wee King. And then the plaque that's underneath the flag stand. I got a great big plaque that's as big as that door.
And it says that, you know, some of the references say you were born in Abrams.
I know, people mistake that.
Yeah.
Because my mother and dad, that was their home. And that was the last place they, what I called home. Because I'd visit with them all the time. The band used to love to go up there. Boy, Mom would put out a spread for those musicians. We were 100 miles away. They say, where are we going to stay, with Ma and Pa tonight?
And that's the King's Jesters?
No, dear, this is the old daughter of Golden West County.
Oh, even that late?
Yeah.
How long did your parents live? When did they die, your parents?
Mom passed away in 1967, and Pa passed away about 5 years later.
And they were living in Abrams?
Yeah.
On a farm?
Yeah, on a farm.
What did your father grow on the farm there?
Oats, corn, potatoes, all different types of vegetables. Mom's flower garden was the most important thing in her life. And Lydia'd have to tell you that she had more flowers. She could put a broomstick that broke off of a broom and stick it in the ground and it'd be a pine tree or an oak tree or something.
She had a green thumb.
Green thumb.
Yeah.
And so did Lydia.
So does Lydia have one.
Yeah, oh my God.
And they also had dairy cows.
Yeah.
And you'd sell the,
yes.
sell the milk.
My son-in-law, later in life, he and my daughter came up on a farm up there, and we were threshing that particular day when they come up to visit, and you put a bag of oats on your shoulder. That bag of oats weighs about 60 pounds or 65 pounds, and my son-in-law, pretty husky guy, about not quite 6 foot, but got big shoulders. He's a builder now. But anyhow, he said, "I'd like to help you, John." I said, "What can I do?" He always called Dad John. And John said, "Dad says, you see that those steps over there, upstairs in the greenery, that's where the restorative." He says, "You go upstairs with that bag and then empty it down into the bin." So he says, "Well," he said, "I'll help you." It's 200 in bags. He said, "Put another one on this shoulder." And wow, his knees bent. He said, "And I got to climb them steps." He says, "Take it off." He said, "Oh no, leave it on. I want to see if I can do it." And he did it.
He did.
Yeah.
But he didn't do it many times, did he?
Yeah, not very often.
That's hard work. Farm work is hard work.
Oh, yeah. That's why I say, this is a theory I had on life, all my, even for my family, the kids. If they could be on a farm between the ages of 10 and 15 and spend one complete cycle from summer to summer, spend the winter on a farm, see how they do, how they live, what they do, that's... Some of the kids didn't even know in those days that milk didn't come in a bottle or a paper or a carton, you know.
I know.
They didn't know where it came from.
They would also learn the value of hard work.
And also, you talk about sex life, you know, years ago when our boys would see the cows and the bull and the horse and the mare getting together, they understood already. And they see kittens born, they see dogs born, pigs born, ducks born, everything. You don't get that no more. There's nobody interested in it.
It was a natural part of life. It wasn't something.
It was life itself.
Smutty. It was life itself.
If you didn't work, you didn't eat.
Yeah. And nobody would give you things, unless I guess it can start.
Neighbors
would help you out. Yeah,
that's right.
Hand-me-downs.
Yeah.
There was a lot of cooperative spirit, though,
yes,
among people in the community.
You could go out for an afternoon or an evening, and they would lock your door. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't have to worry about somebody leaking a farmhouse or that. Of course, Shep was always on hand. He'd chew you up.
Shep was your pup? What was it?
A half collie and a half German police. Yeah, he'd chew him up. He used to go with my mom, and mom would pick, Lydia went with her several times, pick up blackberries along the fence line. Mm-hmm. And Lydia, she was scared of snakes, and so did mom. But she wasn't scared enough to. She'd try to get a stick and move them away. But anyhow, she'd move the stake and they says, "Get him, Shep." And Shep would learn to get him. They hang him on a fence, on a barbed wire fence, while they were picking blackberries.
Shep would kill the...
Kill the snake.
Snakes. And
my mother
would hang them up.
Stick and hang it up. There's many times she had two or three snakes hanging out with barbed wire.
Do blackberries grow up that far north?
Oh, yeah, beautiful, big ones like that, yeah. blackberries, raspberries, strawberries, cantaloupe, anything.
I didn't know that.
And what hardships are in the wintertime.
Yeah. Let me ask you about why did your parents move from Milwaukee back
to the farm? Well, Dad got tired finally, and he figured out that, and he had to beg my mother to go, because she was happy and contented living in a city like that. But by the same token, she listened to him, and I'm glad for their sake, because they only had a third grade education.
Uh-huh.
And the religious part of it, the church thing, helped them to be able to read and write fluently and everything.
How do you mean that?
Well, because with a third grade education, they didn't have any opportunity to advance anything as far as teaching us kids what to do.
Yeah.
So there, my mother and dad got their schooling. From the religious angle, learn to read and everything and write.
In church?
In the church.
Uh-huh. So the church was a very positive influence
on them
for education.
That's right.
And it indirectly influenced what they
used what they learned on the first or third, second, third grade. That was their knowledge as far as carrying conversations and writing letters with them. Pa never was interested. You couldn't get my dad to write a letter. Life depended on it.
But now he was literate, though. He could read and write.
Oh, yeah.
And both of them were literate.
I still got the last letter my mother wrote me before she drowned.
She drowned?
Yeah.
How did she drown?
Well, my dad told his brother, Waller, who lived on a farm next to him, and Stella, two brothers married two sisters, and they lived together on the farm, back to back. And
separate houses,
separate
farms.
Houses, yeah. They had their own families.
Mm-hmm.
And Walter had about five or six heifers he wanted to put out in pasture and leave the hay field to the cows.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked Dad, he says, John, how about me putting these heifers out there in your back farm, 40 acres up there? He says, sure, go ahead, take them across the river, the little Pensauke River. The river ran through the, it was about twice as wide as that street out there. And it ran right by the porch of the house. In fact, you could stand on the porch and throw stones in the river. But they called it Pensauke River, and it emptied into Green Bay, too. So he took, and they put the heifers to pasture. In the meantime, they had about 5 or 6 weeks, like Texas. Pour down rain all the time, just pour. Well, this, in the summertime, this river got down about knee deep. All at once, with this 5 weeks of steady rain, it was chest high. And Ma said, I was at the butcher shop this morning, and I heard their rustling back there. And on that road on the other side of the 40 acres we got there. And he said, what you want me to do about it? She says, Waller's heifers are over there. Let's go and see if they rustle some. They skin them right there and take the meat and leave the hides right there. They were, it was like a big, what am I trying to say, a reserve. Animal reserve is a big property. There's woods and everything in there.
What's the word? word, not park, it's not park. Yeah, animal preserve, a preserve.
Preserve.
I guess, yeah.
Anyhow, she talked him into starting the tractor and go across the river. John said, Pa says, Helen, you're crazy. It's deep out there. She says, well, I'll put on your hip boots and a raincoat. Pa used to have, when the kids, my kids and even the other relatives' kids would come by, he had an extra seat built on the tractor, the regular tractor seat, and right next to it, he'd bent iron bar until the seat attached the seat on that, and even an umbrella so they could be in the shade in the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
So he listened to her, and she put on his big hip boots that he could fish, you know, over the waist and that, and a big heavy raincoat, and went out there, and Pa drove across the river, that little spot right there where he figured it wouldn't be so deep. So he picked it out and went down this way in the ditch and then made the tracks where we used to come with the wagon all the time. We followed those wagon tracks. And we going over there, it was fine. Except one time he hit the big rock that was in the way, and Helen said, John, when you come back, say, move over about 6 inches away, you won't hit that rock. He said, no, I won't do it. He said, well, he said, let's go see. The bossy cows, they call them bossy, they put a bell on them.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you find out where the cows are.
Sure.
And the bossy was, you couldn't hear the bossy. And they said, well, Ma said, see, bossy's missing. He says, let's go to the other end of the 40 acres. And went down there, sure enough, all the cows were there. Bossy had lost her bill. The bill came off. She must have run her neck against the tree or itching it. So anyhow, they come back. Came down that incline from the other side, and the tractor ran real good. There was no sweat going through, going up there. But coming back, he hit that stone and jarred. And about the same time he jarred, a wave come by and hit the carburetor and drowned out the carburetor. And Ma fell off backwards. And Pa didn't know she was gone till he looked around, and then he was too late. He got into the water up to here and he couldn't reach her, couldn't do nothing. And she floated around that whole crew down to the neighbor's farm, which between him and Waller, and he saw Helen going by, and he jumped in, and his part of the river was shallow there, and he ran in there and brought her to the ground and gave her artificial respiration, but she was gone. Dad left that tractor standing in that damn water all the time.
He
would never go back.
Never move.
No. And that's the way she passed away.
Well, how old was she then?
She was 71.
And that was in what year, you told me?
67.
67. Yeah. And then your father died?
5 years later. He was 81. He'd have been 81.
Yeah. What was his illness? What did he die of?
He died of loneliness. He fell off from 197 pounds down to 110. And sick, he was a diabetic too.
Diabetic,
yeah.
Did he live by himself on the farm then?
No, he'd come in the city, live with my sister Irene.
In Milwaukee?
Yeah, and he sold the farm.
So you all don't own the farm anymore?
No, he sold it. So in fact, there's been two buyers there. They had two owners already since Pa passed away, which is 70, I don't remember if he died before I had my stroke or after. Yeah, it had to be after. And I had my stroke in 78, so he probably died about 80 or 81.
Do you have any relatives living in that part of Wisconsin now, Abrams?
Yes, several, yeah.
what kin would they be to you?
Cousins.
Cousins.
Yeah. In fact, Myron and Debbie, they're Walter's son married a girl and they go to Florida every winter.
Mm-hmm.
They just come to just a couple weeks ago, and they're down in Florida now at Amelia Island, right out of Sarasota.
Mm-hmm.
Got a card from them today.
Mm. Let's talk about the your parents' family backgrounds. Now you said that most of your ancestors came from Poland, and they were
My grandparents.
Your grandparents came from Poland.
But my mother and dad were born here.
Yeah.
In the United States.
All right. So your mother's mother and father both came from Poland.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now which one came from Austria?
My dad's.
On your father's side. Okay. All right. Your mother's family then. When did they come from Poland? Do you have any idea?
Well, my mother was the firstborn, so.
And she would have been born what, about 1890 something? No.
She was 71 and 67, so figure.
In the 1890s, yeah. Then, yeah, she'd have been 1890s. So they homesteaded the land in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Where your mother was born, I guess.
Yeah, she was born. No, my mother was born in Chicago. My grandfather and grandmother lived in Chicago first.
First.
They went on the farm.
And then they went up to the farm.
Yeah, because when land was being given away at that time, he found out about it. Grandpa Milzarek found out about it.
Uh-huh.
And he told several of his friends, and there was a little clan of people lived in the same neighborhood, like in Sabisky.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my dad's people, they lived in Suamico because they had their cousin Drubik and Grandpa Kaczynski come from the same territory, Mr. Drubik and my dad's grandfather.
You mean so, back in Poland?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So they were up there with their little clique that uh-huh. they had.
But now your mother's parents first were living in Chicago.
Yeah.
When they came from Poland.
From Poland.
And they met in, did they meet in Chicago, do you think? Or had
my
they, were they already married?
Grandfather?
Yeah. Had they already married
they came? I think they were married before.
Before they came over?
Yeah. I think friends of theirs in Chicago made them, influenced them.
To come to Chicago first. And then they heard about the land that was being given away. If you homesteaded it.
That's right.
And that, what, 40 acres or 80 acres?
Oh, no, yeah. Grandpa Milzarek, he had 87 acres.
That he homesteaded?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And the other one, the other grandfather that was living in Little Suamico, he had over 200 acres.
Well, did he buy some of it or did he homestead all of it?
Yeah, he homesteaded. In fact, you're right, he bought another 80 acres after he had the 120.
Yeah, because you couldn't homestead, there was a limit
right,
to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. See, and they were living in Reading, Pennsylvania at the time when they came to Suamico.
Okay, so your father's mother and father.
They were married before they came to Reading, Pennsylvania.
They met in Reading, Pennsylvania?
And my grandfather worked in the coal mines in Pennsylvania.
Oh, so that's your father's father, worked in the coal mines. He had come from Poland?
And from Austria.
From Austria,
yeah.
Okay. But your mother's, your grandfather, your
mother's
father's mother was from Poland?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, why do you think they came from Poland and from Austria to this country?
They, like any immigrant, wanted to be American. I figured from looking at the pictures of them when they were young and that, they probably felt like they should, that was poverty up there in Poland at that time. Of course, at one time, Poland was the biggest state in the whole land of Europe. And until they start picking it to pieces, everybody's Slovenians and Czechs and Germans. But they came and were looking for a better living, I guess. Mm-hmm.
You knew, because your grandparents were well,
oh,
did they?
I loved them.
They were hard-working people? Yeah,
hard-working people, and my father's father, my dad's father was a fiddle player, old-time fiddle player.
Oh, really?
Played his fiddle player. And that's where he got his music from. And then I got mine from my dad.
So it's a family tradition, sort of. Talk about your father then. He was a musician. He played what?
Violin. And then later got a concertina. And that's the same way I went. I studied violin first, and I learned to play the concertina, and my violin music taught me to play the accordion. When my sister quit, I got the accordion automatically.
Your sister was the first one to
Yeah, she played piano. But she couldn't carry a piano everywhere we go, so. Yeah. And but she didn't like it. She was just at the age when she had her breasts were just big enough for the accordion. She says, "I don't want to talk." And he says, "Frankie, go ahead, take the lessons. You got six more coming. You go get her." And he take me over there. It tells it in that little book of Wisconsin I got. It's a very interesting article. I don't know who gave that man all that information, but he must be a smart man. Oh, and put out a book like that, and you're going to be surprised
really?
When you see some of the people that were born in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Fred McMurray, Liberace, Hildegard,
yeah.
Woody Herman. You go down the line.
Oh, yeah, a lot of people.
Oh, man. Yeah. And I think I'm in that book.
That's right. Well, but see, I want you to tell me about that same, give me the same material in your words, though.
Okay.
You see, that's why. Do you remember your father playing the violin when you were a boy?
Oh, not when I was born. No.
I said a boy.
Oh boy, sure, I had to.
Where would he play it?
Well,
at home.
At home, to entertain the relatives that come by to visit and that. And we had, I'll never forget, my godfather lived about 4 or 5 miles from us, and they'd drive over on Sunday, go to church, and then come over to the house, and Pa get out the fiddle or the concertina and entertain. And they had some of the kids that play harmonica. In fact, I won. That was the first instrument for me. Harmonica. I won $3 in an amateur contest.
The harmonica?
Yeah.
The harmonica was your first instrument.
Yeah.
That you learned to play.
Yeah.
Where was the contest?
Oh, it was in a theater.
In Milwaukee.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Shotgun Theater, about 100 seats or so, and they had amateur contests. They didn't care what talent you had, if you sing or if you play a musical instrument or dance. And my buddies got together and they said, "Come on, Frankie, go up there and play your harmonica." And I used to play, "Ain't she sweet?" Remember, you have to flat that reed a little bit. That's an "Ain't she?" That was the song I won with.
"Ain't she sweet?"
Yeah.
How much did you win?
$3.
$3.
$5 was first prize, $3 second prize, and $2 the third.
This was a movie theater.
A movie theater.
And they'd have an amateur night.
Amateur night.
Uh-huh. They'd show, silent movies? This would have been, in the 20s, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah, they had the silent because that
had the, had
playing
the,
that
had,
piano.
Had the piano there.
Yeah.
Right? Did you go to the movies at that movie house?
Yeah.
When you were?
And then my brother Gene, that's how long that movie house lasted, was Usher in that theater. Yeah.
And this was a neighborhood theater.
A neighborhood theater.
But what else did you do as a boy for entertainment? Because you made music, I know that. I
played basketball with the high school team and also the church team.
Mm-hmm.
And my hero was Bud Foster, the coach of Wisconsin University. And every time I heard that name or read it in the paper somewhere, man, or I could just picture him, because he was and Wisconsin used to have a championship team in those days. But now it's all changed.
Did you ever want to play sports in college?
No.
Did you ever want to go to college?
No.
You want to go?
I knew I wanted what I wanted when I saw my dad doing all that stuff. I said, this is for me, music.
He wanted music.
Yeah.
But now your father didn't make a living from his music.
No.
But you thought you could?
Well, I did. This book tells why I moved. Poverty. You put it all together. You earn money here and earn money there. And put it all together if you have some money at the end of the week. My uncle was had me working in his office, swiping the pen after school for $5. I'd go out on weekend.
Wiping the what?
Uncle Lawrence Keene was an optician.
Uh-huh.
And he said, Frank, I want you to come down, clean up the office, empty the paper basket, and wipe the pens off, and put my books in order and everything out.
Uh-huh.
And put my, but don't touch anything that's got to do with opticians. Might break something. And he said $5.
Mm-hmm.
So that was 5 days a week after school. I'd go and spend about 2 hours, an hour and a half with him.
Mm-hmm.
This way on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, we'd play a damn lake out there somewhere, and I'd have about $20 for the days, 3 days' work.
Uh-huh.
So what am I doing working for my uncle for $5?
Yeah. But this was after you got your first band together, right? That you were doing that.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you were working in your uncle's office.
Yeah.
Which uncle was that?
Uncle Lawrence's, Aunt Frances's. Oh, that's the sister that I told you that was my mother, my dad's sister that I couldn't think.
You couldn't think of Frances.
That's why there were seven of them.
Okay.
Eight. I think.
Eight. All right.
Let's see, Waller. Frances was after Waller.
So it was her husband that you were working for?
Uh-huh. In Germany.
And you thought that wasn't you weren't making much money there?
Well, I know I wasn't. Yeah. Not just going to school.
But that's when you were still in high school?
In high school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did y'all ever take any trips when you were a boy? When you were still at home? Did
sure,
you ever go anywhere?
On a farm with my dad.
Well, but where else? I mean, would you go anywhere else? You didn't go to any big cities? Did you go to Chicago ever?
We were, no. Oh yeah, we had relatives in Chicago,
uh-huh.
Cousins and that.
Mm-hmm. So you would visit relatives in Chicago?
Yeah.
And, because Milwaukee was a big city, wasn't it?
Yes, well, it's still, but it's decreasing. It's not moving up the ladder like some of the other towns.
But it must have been kind of exciting to grow up in Milwaukee, though, wasn't it?
Well, the things that I enjoyed about Milwaukee the most is you get, first of all, the baseball. We had the Brewers in the park out there.
Mm-hmm.
Then later on, Green Bay Packers football team. And some of the best skaters in the world come from Wisconsin. And I credit that to the fact that in wintertime, most of the schoolyards' playgrounds
mm-hmm.
are frozen over. And you have school championships, high school, grade schools championships. Every kid learns to skate.
Mm-hmm.
Today it's all skiing, everything, or snowmobile. But they got tailor-made things. Well, the staves that my father put on my foot, I couldn't even ski in that. And nobody ever thought of a snowmobile.
Did you go skiing when you were a boy?
No.
Skiing?
No.
Just ice skating, just
yeah,
winter sport.
That was every night if I could.
So that was your main?
Kosciuszko Park. That was the main thing in the wintertime.
What park?
Kosciuszko.
Kosciuszko.
Kosciuszko. Kosciuszko, we call it.
Yeah, Kosciuszko Park, okay.
Tadeusz Kosciuszko.
That name sounds familiar. Wasn't he a patriot, didn't he?
Yeah, he's a patriot. He was a big general.
That's right.
General of the Polish Army.
That's right. But he became a kind of a hero to Americans too, didn't he? Because I remember the name.
Yeah.
Let me see if there's anything else I need to ask you about. Now, what about you mentioned the church several times? Was that an important influence on your family? Was it the church? that you all belong to?
No, not really. In our early days, it didn't mean anything too much. But in my mother and dad's later in life, it meant a lot to them. Because I don't use it for publication, because I had arguments with my mother about Jehovah's Witness. They were Jehovah's Witnesses.
But your parents were?
Yeah. See, and this is where they got that education. But then later on, I found out that in going home to visit once in a while, Mrs. Stanwich, she'd say, "Oh," she says, "Helen," she says, "I saw your boy on television, or I heard him on the radio." And my mother used to use that for a door opener. Well, you know how they peddle books. But still, I can't take it away from her.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I couldn't have. I'd die, you know, but I had arguments with her.
But now, they were born Catholics, though, weren't they?
Yeah.
And they were converted to the Jehovah's Witnesses?
Well, they didn't. When they moved to Abrams, they didn't have a church, a Catholic church there.
Oh, they didn't?
So they joined the Jehovah's Witnesses.
And so later in life, they became Jehovah's Witnesses. Were they still Jehovah's Witnesses when they died?
Yeah.
They still were?
I'll tell you a true story, and this is hard to believe. But when my dad went in and he was going to cut a leg off because of his diabetic situation, and his leg swelled up, his doctor called me long distance. He says, "Frankie," he said, "I want you to come up here to the condo." He says, "Your dad's in the hospital, very sick. And I got to amputate a leg. He won't let me do it." And he said, "I got to. I have to." And he says, "He's a stubborn man. And your mother's right by his side." And she said, "Mother, no way, John." He says, "So I'm calling you in desperation." So I said, "Whatever my dad wants, I cannot go against his wishes, because Jehovah's Witness don't believe in transfusions." And I flew up there, and I begged the doctor. I says, "See how long he can do it just the way you want." And he says, "Well," he says, "I can give him insulin. It'll postpone a little while and help him along, but he said eventually he's going to have it all." And I talked to my dad and talked to my mother, and I said, "Mom," I said, "if Pa has to die, you're going to be the one to take the blame, because you're telling them not to do it. But let them operate on him." And she said, "No." She said, "I don't think so." Finally, she said, "I'll tell you what I'll do. If he promises us not to use his blood transfusion, then we'll do it." And my dad liked threw a fit, because they were hanging that insulin bag down there. And he says, "Frankie, what's that? That's blood, isn't it?" I said, "No, Pa." I said, "I won't lie to you, I'll tell you. That's insulin." And he said, "Is that going to make me well?" I said, "They will for a while, but it ain't going to last long." He said, "Well, telling you like I told the doctor. I came on this earth with two legs. I'm going to go out of this earth with two legs." And that's how he didn't never have the operation, because Mom drowned before he died. See?
Well, but
it was his diabetic condition that
he lived several years after.
Yeah. After that operation.
It wasn't an operation, though, was it?
No, it was a cure of some kind.
Yeah.
I don't know how he did.
But it didn't get any better, did it?
No, never did.
So, and he did die. You think he would have lived longer if he'd had the leg amputated?
Well, no, I guess he didn't. I don't know. Like I said, I've dreamt this over so many times. Suppose Ma would have said, "Give him the operation." They took the leg off. Maybe Ma would have never died.
Yeah.
See? Then what do? So one offsets the other.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole relation, our whole family knew that there was going to be a big argument about it. But
did any of the other members of your family become Jehovah's Witnesses?
No.
Just your mother
and
father?
Just mother and dad, yeah. And they did real well by it, you know. They made friends. My mom never met a stranger. She'd go in and say, "My name is Helen Kaczynski." He says, "You know, you ever listen to Pee Wee King?" He said, "Yeah, I heard him on radio today in Green Bay." He says, "Is he visiting?" He says, "Yeah. Why don't you bring him to the house?" And there it went again.
Well, you know, Jehovah's Witnesses are very evangelical. They will use any means they can to get you know, some influence. Yeah, to get those books into somebody's hand. That's interesting. But when you were a boy, you all went to church together, though.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the Catholic Church in Milwaukee. In Milwaukee.
Then for a while, when we moved on Winnick Avenue, they more or less went to Lutheran over there. They had a big Lutheran church not too far from us, so they went to Lutheran church for a couple of months. And
coffee or something?
We're talking up a farm. Listen, I'm dredging up memories I bet he hasn't thought about in years.
I'm sure.
Pa died about 5 or 6 years after Ma did. 67 is Ma. She died in 67.
We can check the dates. You've got records, I know. But he's giving me good material. See what I like are the stories, the anecdotes. You know, see that's what's good because it dramatizes a person's life. You know.
We went back to Grandpa and Grandma Kaczynski and Grandma and Grandpa Mazarek. He's worse than the dentist.
Going down deeper and deeper. Yeah.
Well, get back connected to water.
Well, we're gonna stop in a few minutes because. I don't want to exhaust Pee Wee, but I do want to make a date to come back and do another. We've been here almost 2 hours, you see. And I find that after about 2 hours, you know, you get tired. And I could listen to Pee Wee all evening, but, you know, I think your memory will get a little exhausted.
Well, since you told me you were coming, I start digging and bringing out things. I want to show you some of it. It'll come. But it all, I know what you're shooting for now. I said, or I did.
Exactly. I want them to be as accurate as possible. So that's why I said we could check dates and spellings of names. I want those to be accurate. But, you know, if Pee Wee remembers something that happened in his childhood and he gets it on the wrong street, that's okay, you know. We don't need to check it that way because it's as he remembers it, you know.
You have that picture in our scrapbook of Ma right with a bicycle and Uncle Kelly with his uniform standing by me. That's the first thing I can remember as a little kid, that tricycle. Remember that picture?
I remember.
Yeah, the bicycle, Mom was leading me on the sidewalk right there, and Uncle Kelly just came back from the service, and then Auntie Anna and him got married after that. I was about 3 years old. And now I got a grandson. It's 2 years old, he's got a tricycle.
Oh, but maybe it won't.
They won't steal it.
I don't really think I need anything, Ms. King, right now. Do you want something to drink right now? I think in about maybe another 10 minutes we'll call a halt to it and let Pee Wee get back to normal.
Okay.
What kinds of music would your father play, or when they would
polkas?
Polkas mainly.
And once in a while, he'd get a modern song. I'll use, for instance, "When the Moon Comes Over the Mountain," something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's much later in Kansas City Kitty, when I saw Kansas City Kitty. But in those days, I still got some that sheet music upstairs, man.
Your father could read music?
Oh, yeah. You have to when you play the concertina, because that's all the numbers.
Oh.
Okay. and he played the violin, but that was self-taught. And then I took violin lessons and his fiddle for a long time, and then finally he bought me mine.
Who taught you the violin?
I went across the street to my dad made friends with the owner of the bar there, and I guess after a couple of drinks he said, why don't you send Frankie my daughter, she'll teach him. And she was the one that taught me to play the violin.
Do you remember her name?
That's what I was going to come to, and right off.
Okay, that's all right.
I know the lady across the street with the grocery store. Brzezinski, but the woman that taught me the violin, I gotta have to think of. Maybe my sister remembered.
All right. So your father would play polka, and this would be at home when family members would come
or
in.
Or dances, or weddings, or a lot of times they'd have a picnic out in one of the lakes, and they'd ask my dad. Yeah, here's my accordion teacher. My pencil. Before. There's my brother with his concertina. He was working in the Western Band when I came down to Nashville.
Well, this is from the...
this is the book here.
From right there, uh-huh. Could I borrow this and copy it? I mean, you made a copy of this.
I made a copy of that, but I made it for you.
Oh, did you? Okay. All right. Let me take... You got two copies. You got two copies. I'll just take one of them. Right. Yeah, that'd be good.
See, that's my sister. This is before Jean was born. That's me, my sister, and her.
Uh-huh. Okay, yeah, that'd be good. Good information for me, you. Oh. See, I can fill in some of these, some of this information from these sources.
Here's what fills me. This, I haven't met this one, but he's got to be one hell of a guy. Al Jarreau, one of the greats. Illustrated History of Scotland. He's going to put out a second edition. Because this book sells for $25. Mr. Corinth. This is the pioneer, Henry Hempstead, Francis Clark, Fred Milwaukee, Fred Merrill, Webster, Bob. So now we come to the other. Kahn, Otis, Carter, Shepherd, Harry Hansen, we were in Wisconsin in here. Wisconsin, around. Now we come to it. Music people and appreciation. Now we see. Some of those are Bunny Berrigan, big band. Bill Carson, the orchestra we were in Milwaukee. He was about to sing in Milwaukee Head, and I was. I was due to a political man. Mm-hmm. Any fields. Marvel man. There's a Romy Gosh. The first one got a mention in the political bands. He was the king of the political back
Tony, about 35, 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I knew this man deals with this German music that ever came to Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
And during the war, they took him off the air because people, they didn't want nothing to do with it. They were really hungry.
Mm-hmm.
Hell was out there. Jerome. Grace Carpick is her father, I don't know what they call him.
Mm-hmm.
Max King,
mm-hmm.
He was here, he had a kiss her. Liberace. Mm-hmm. Phil McNally, Sam Madden. You got some big names in
there. Oh, you do, right.
You do. That's pretty fast company.
Yes, Paul.
Les Paul, yeah, he's from Waukesha.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Take that with you.
Well, how many, let me see, this is...
Five pages.
Five pages,
yeah.
Okay, well, didn't you copy this from here?
Yeah, that's right. I knew
you. Did you copy all of it? Let's see. Let's see, if you've got it all, then I don't need to take it. Yeah, it's all here. I'll just take this. This is what I really want. Let me ask you a few more short questions, and then we'll close up shop for the day, and set another time.
See, we didn't use too many pictures.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think you need pictures.
Huh?
See, we use pictures in this book. See,
yeah,
put them all in the middle.
Yeah, you put them in the middle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. See,
it is pictures.
Yeah.
That's about it. I thought, you know, I
This is told in his words.
Yeah.
Right.
But I'll tell you, one of the reasons, and I'm sure you're familiar with the thing I'm about to say, if you use pictures, then you've got to give credits.
Mm-hmm.
Because every one of the people that he writes about in there are superstars today.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mean, if they're professionally taken. Now, if you take a picture, then it's yours.
Yeah.
But if a photograph is taken by a known photographer.
But you got to get permission from the star, too.
Not to use this picture.
Well, I've never
used... If I take your picture, and I want to use it in a book or in a newspaper, you don't have to give me permission.
You don't?
No. If it's a publicity photograph that belongs to you, and that you own the rights to, but if I take the picture, see, you're a public figure. I mean Roy Rogers is a public figure,
yeah.
and if President Bush is a public figure. So if I take his picture, he's in public, and I can use it. I mean, you know, he can't keep me from using his picture, you know. So you have to get permission if you use somebody else's photograph, and you know whose it is.
Exploited.
Yeah, but you see, from your family album, we can use those.
Yeah.
You don't have to get permission from the people. Well, most of them wouldn't be living
Eddie
anyway.
Arnold, see, many one day said to me, "Scissors, I saw your souvenir book. This is that's a damn good book, Scissors. I didn't give you permission, but." How did you get by not getting permission from Eddie? I said, why? She said, well, Eddie, every time his pictures are being shown, I said, oh, for God's sakes, Minnie. Jerry Purcell, Eddie's manager, scares people away with that.
Now, you see, the reason in here, they've got the photographer's name,
yeah,
and then courtesy of the National Network. You see, it's because they had to borrow this picture,
mm-hmm,
from the National Network.
That's
most
right.
Of these are from the National Network, I think.
Yeah, they are.
Now, except for this one, you see, this is a family picture,
yeah,
and so they don't give any credit. It's just a family snapshot, you see.
Yeah.
Now here, courtesy of the National Network, you see. And if we used anything from, say, the Grand Ole Opry, we'd have to get permission from the Opry. Yeah, I mean, it's their picture, you know, that's why you have to do that. Let's see, there's no, that's a family
picture,
and there's no credit. And apparently here, too. Let's see, photo by Grannis, whoever that is,
photograph. And if it's a known photographer, see photo courtesy of WSM. Photo by Jimmy, courtesy of the National Network. So we don't need to worry about that.
See, I've even used John Wayne and never asked him for permission.
And you don't need to?
Golfing with celebrities, my God, I...
You don't need to.
Well, you saw the book, because you did the interview.
Yeah, sure. No, you don't need to do that, unless the photograph belongs to somebody else. See, it's the photograph that you have to get permission to use, if it belongs to somebody else. But you can't tell me I can't use your image, because you're a public person, you know.
And that book, as I told you, I'm going to tell the story as it is. Mr. Franklin meeting me a singing cowboy.
Yeah.
Consequently, I hired good singers. Eddie was one of the best to begin with.
Right. Well, we're going to get to that later, but let me see if there's anything else I want to ask you about your early experiences. Did you all had phonograph records at home, didn't you? You had a record player, a graphonola, or what was it? Do you remember what it was?
It was one of those old timers.
Wind-up kind?
Yeah.
You remember what kind it was?
No, I couldn't. Oh, yeah. I'll bet you my sister would remember, because she probably got pictures of it somewhere. And then another thing was, in those days, when we got the polka records that were popular at that time, my uncle Tony, my mother's brother, he had so damn many that I don't know how he got rid of all of them without cracking half of them, because they were so old. And I learned some polkas off of that, off of his records that he had. And I remember OK Records, Bluebird Records, all that. But they didn't have any influence on me wanting to be in music or writing songs.
It was the live music that you heard your father play, mainly.
Yeah.
You listened to the radio too. Did you listen to the radio when you were a boy?
Not when I was a boy. When I would go on the farm to be with my grandmother and grandfather and that, I'd probably play the radio up there, but I didn't listen to it. Didn't have time.
You have time?
No.
So you didn't listen to a lot of music on the radio?
Not until later in life.
Uh-huh. What?
We didn't have much. There was nothing, because I remember as a kid, I'd go out when Jack Dempsey would fight, or Gene Tunney, or Sharkey, or that. I was peddling papers in Milwaukee Journal. Hi, Wextra, get your papers here. Jack Dempsey loses, knocked out by Tunney. See, that was 3 cents.
Sure.
But everybody give you a nickel.
Yeah, right. They liked your call, you might say. Did you have any other ambition other than to be a musician? That's always what you wanted to be?
That's what I wanted to be.
Always?
Yeah.
Well, now you served an apprenticeship one time, didn't
well,
you?
Well, that was going to the vocational school, trying to become a draftsman, because Uncle Lawrence says, you go to vocational school at night and practice and learn how to be a draftsman.
Who said that, Uncle?
Uncle Lawrence, the one I worked for.
Uncle Lawrence, okay, yeah.
So he figured a draftsman was would be my forte.
Mm-hmm.
And see, in those days, I didn't say nothing about being a musician, or I was happy doing what I was doing.
Uh-huh. And
in fact, I didn't know better.
Mm-hmm. This was after high school, or while you were still in high school?
While I was still in high school.
He wanted you to go to vocational classes at night.
Yeah.
Well, did you not like it?
No, I went to vocational school, and I had to learn to make those diagrams and all that. Hell, I saw no reason for me to use it because I didn't know what I had to do. But to please him, I did.
Yeah. And were you kind of bored with it?
I was. I quit.
You quit. How long did you go?
About a year.
A year?
Yeah.
So you never became a draftsman.
They called them prevos back in those days. Prevocational.
Prevocational, yeah. Right.
Where did you go to school? Prevo. What's the matter? Don't you have a trade?
Yeah. Did your mother and father worry about you that you couldn't support yourself because you didn't have a trade? Did they worry about you?
Mm-mm.
Why not?
I always hustled for a living. I paid my mother board when I was selling newspapers.
Now this was when you were in high school?
Yeah.
You were selling newspapers in high school?
Yeah.
And you paid her board?
Paid board.
How much did you pay her?
$3.
A week?
Yeah. She said, as long as you give me something, she said, that means that you're going to go out and work for more. And for my aunts and uncles, I used to drive Aunt Marie and Aunt Anna to their work at the Fried Osterman Leather Glove Factory.
What's the name of it?
Fried Osterman. F-R-E-I-D Osterman. O-S-T-E-R-M-A-N. It was a glove factory. Big, well,
right.
I think they're still in business. But I used to drive them to work. And then they'd buy my gas 8 cents a gallon, 9 cents. That's when I got a little older and when I was finishing high school, you know, and had a car that I came down here with.
Yeah. What kind of car was it?
It was a Marquette Touring. Boy, it was a schnazzy. It had the lights on the front of it, like to the grill, the radiator, and had the cutout where you put it. Anytime you went through a tunnel, you'd pull the cutout. I'll tell you. It was side curtains in winter time.
What year was it? Do you remember? What model?
Well, 1932. 32 or 33. They were made by Buick, I think.
A Buick?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I bought that. My brother-in-law was the one who figured the deal.
Have you always bought American cars?
Well, I didn't know nothing.
No, I mean, always.
You
never had a foreign car?
No. Mm-hmm. I don't believe in them today.
No, I don't either. So you never had any other ambition than to be a musician. Have you ever regretted?
No, I have never. If I could, if the Lord would do that and have me start all over again, I wouldn't change it. I suffered through everything else, had the good times, the bad times, but the main thing, the bottom line is I'm still here. And that's what I always tell these disc jockeys when they say, well, you're bound. Guys like Randy Travis making so much money, and you guys started it. And Jimmy Dickens says to the one disc jockey the other day, he said, those boys don't make all that money. He says, their agent charges that, but when he pays off all the bills, how much has he got left? And that's the only answer I'd give to him.
So you've had a good life?
I think so. I think I'm happy with
You're
the
satisfied.
Family and marriage, 55 years for Taylor. And I enjoy the kids' company and they enjoy ours, you know. We're still a close family.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you more about your family later on. You changed your name to Frankie King first. Yeah. I mean, you put your first name
because
as Frank.
Because of Wayne King.
You like Wayne King?
Oh, he was playing the dance, and we were playing a club. And he told me what his name was and why he changed it. He says, when you get to change your name, change it to an easy name, K-I-N-G, they can't make a mistake. And he says, do that, and he said, that's so I was Frankie King. From then on, I had band fronts made, and that sparking stuff on the band fronts and everything else, Frankie King and the King's Jesters, you know.
Yeah.
The boys in the band says, Jesus, boy, we're uptown now.
Hot stuff, yeah.
It was one of the best things we did, because we started playing better dances and the ballrooms and everything. And all through Wisconsin and that area.
People remembered your name.
Yes, they saw it all the time on the bandstand.
Yeah. What was Wayne King's name before he changed it?
Kozlowski or something like that.
He was Polish also?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
No, Krolikowski. K-R-O-L in Polish is King. Krur. The Krur in Poland.
Yeah.
So he changed it. Well, look at the well.
That's right.
But I don't think he's Bohemian.
I don't know what his name was. Do you?
No, I don't. I can't remember.
But it's easier for most people to remember. I guess Poles don't have any trouble remembering Polish names. Because you're rattling off these spellings and everything, and I couldn't remember any of them.
The good part of it is the one Ted, this Ted Fabian I told you about, he and I correspond, and we'll put on the last line, say, God bless you, peace Bogdan. Or he called me the other day, he says, Stary Jok Yaktam, which is, old man, how is it? See, so then I wrote him back, I says, Kto movies, sir, ja jestem Stary Jok. So then his card came back, he says, we all know how old you're going to be, so don't worry about it.
Did you all speak Polish at home? Did your parents? Your parents did?
Yeah, parents did, and grandparents did. They spoke broken English, and Mom spoke a little broken English, but Pa had always rattled off real good.
Your father could speak English? Oh, he spoke English?
Spoke English very better well than my mother did.
Uh-huh. But they spoke Polish to each other?
Because, yeah, they did. Once in a while, they, switched to English, but Polish, and I used to get Polish newspaper when I first came to Louisville.
So you are fluent in Polish?
Oh, yeah.
You read Polish and write Polish? And
I can't write it anymore, but I can read most of it.
Yeah. And you speak it fluently, I guess?
Not fluently, just I have to, like anybody who is a linguist, or that's what they call it, the guy who translates with the foreign guy speaking to Americans.
Well, translator or a...
Translator.
Okay. Yeah.
It takes me a little to translate. Yeah.
But Polish was the language that you spoke in your home when you were growing up. It was the language.
Not as much in my home as my grandparents.
Yeah. But your brothers and sisters would have learned. Did they learn Polish too at home?
I don't think they. Irene might remember a little bit, but I don't think Max. Well, Max would because he grew up in that era.
So your brothers and sisters then would speak to your parents in English.
Yeah.
In English.
So and if Ma didn't understand, she'd ask a question. You know.
Were your church services in Polish too? The church that you went to in Wisconsin?
No, Latin. The Catholic and Latin at that time.
But even the sermons were in Latin?
No. Yeah, it was in Polish.
That was in Polish. So this was a Polish...
We got up from the pulpit, it was Polish, yeah.
It was a Polish parish then. Yeah. What was the name of the church again?
St. Cyril,
that's right. And with the... Would the instruction classes, like Sunday school classes, be in Polish too?
Yeah.
Everything would have been Polish?
Oh, yeah. When I married Lydia, some of the prayers that we do, I can still remember some of the wording of the prayers are the same thing as that. And as now the Lutherans say, towards the end of the prayer, it says, I believe in the Catholic Church and the communion of saints.
Mm-hmm. The creed.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Nicene Creed.
But they don't make that C Catholic capital.
Oh, wow.
See? And that always bugged me because we're all in it for the same business, for the same thing.
Well, are you all still practicing Catholic?
No.
You're not?
Lutheran.
Oh, you're a Lutheran now?
Yeah. I've been since I've been married.
Oh. So Lee is Lutheran?
Lutheran. German Lutheran.
German Lutheran.
Oh, I see.
What church do you go to here in Louisville?
St. John.
St. John Lutheran Church.
been a charter member.
Is that right?
Started when I was on Grandview Avenue, and now they built the big one.
So your children were all brought up Lutherans?
Yeah. Uh-huh. All married by Lutheran preacher.
Yeah. I grew up in Alabama, and there are no Lutherans down there. None. I'm Baptist, you know, of course. Yeah. Some Catholics in the cities, but not in the country. You know, we just didn't have any Catholics or Lutherans when I was a child. All Baptist, Methodists, and Presbyterians. That was about it.
And to me, a Presbyterian is a good drink.
A Presbyterian is a good drink. What do you mean?
Water, whiskey and water. That's a Presbyterian.
Oh, I didn't know that. See, I don't know.
Oh, nobody does. You go in a bar down here, say, give me a Presbyterian. He said, I never saw one.
That is the real, what you asked
for? Yeah, we're up in Wisconsin, Michigan, Minnesota. That. Yeah. Presbyterian.
It's what now?
Water. Bourbon and water.
Bourbon and water is the Presbyterian.
Down here, I guess they call it bourbon and branch water.
Yeah, bourbon and branch water, yeah. That's right. Well, we have covered a lot of territory. I want to make sure that I've got down to the point where I want to pick up next time. I do want to talk about Mr. Frank, of course, who was such a big influence on you.
Big influence.
And about your life here in Louisville. But it's going to take us a number of sessions. I hope you don't get tired of me.
You picked a good time. Wait, I'll tell you. I don't do much around. I work February 29th, leap year Saturday, up in Juliet, Illinois with the Hall of Fame package. Mm-hmm. And I didn't take any bookings at all. Mm-hmm. And the reason I didn't make any appearances this weekend, I did not have my upper partial. Mm-hmm. I brought it to the doctor, and Dr. Kuhl, I says, you ain't so hot. And he says, what's wrong? I said, I cracked my upper plate. He says, let me see. And I says, here it is. Broke right in half.
Yeah.
And I was a Gabby Hayes for a week up in Michigan.
Is that right? Yeah.
On Thanksgiving, I started having trouble, and from then on, and I just got the upper plate this week.
But you're here most of the time, when you're out.
Yeah, I'm
traveling around.
Mm-hmm. I'll let you know where I'm going.
Could we set up a time for me to come back the next time?
Right.
I have a pretty flexible schedule. See, what we can do is we'll have a session, and then at the end of the session, we'll set the next one.
Right.
So we won't do a whole slew of it one time. We'll just do, you know, one at a time.
I don't have anything to do.
Let me see.
Lydia's going to a meeting February 14th. Is that too far off? Or would you rather have it early? We can have it early.
What about Monday afternoon?
Good.
Monday afternoon?
Mm-hmm.
I teach until about 2. Could I come by about, say, 2:30?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then...
I'm marking my calendar.
Okay, 2:30 on the 10th. That's this coming Monday. And what I'd like to do next time is to pick up chronologically where we left off and maybe talk a little bit more about the King's Jesters. And then I want to talk about Mr. Frank and the time you spent with Gene Autry and you're coming to Louisville. And playing on WHAS and WAVE. That was later. That was later. And then Autry, of course, went to Hollywood, didn't he? And you stayed here. And then you formed the Golden West Cowboys.
No, I worked with the Loud Cabin Boys when Gene Autry went to.
Yeah, right. And then I got it. And then you formed the Golden West Cowboys after that.
Right.
Yeah. And so we'll pick up there and do that and. We probably won't get to the Grand Ole Opry until the time after that, because there's so much to be done. But I want to be thorough. See, I'd rather have too much material than not enough.
That's right.
You see. While I've got these here, would you sign these for me, Pee Wee? Do you mind? I've got a pen here.
You got a soft pen?
Yeah, I think that'll. And if you would date it, today is what? The
sixth.
Yeah. By the way, all of this is going to the University of Alabama. All of my papers.
Oh.
And I've given them a lot of sheet music and a lot of recordings. Oh, I've been collecting 78s for years, mainly country and western, and anything to do with the South, anything. And they have thousands of recordings that I've given them already. So this will be in my collection at the University of Alabama.
6 to 92.
Okay. And here is Hodel.
Yeah, this is who I used to write the writer for.
Uh-huh.
Corn cover.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah.
I will treasure these. I really will.
This is one I didn't know about. Lost one of my fiddle players.
Oh, really?
Yeah, right here in the past two weeks ago now.
Mm.
He was the third fiddle player. This is Red, this is Shorty.
Oh. if you just sign your name to these, you don't need to write anything. But this is my, I've got multiple copies of some of these, but I've been collecting these for a long time too. And if you would date it like 2-2, what is it? 6-2, and that would, I can look back and tell him. Lots of these. Do you mind signing those?
No.
Okay. I've got more than you have, I bet.
I know you have.